okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stacking Jacks. I'm Tom Hodges. Mr. Bill Weber on the board. S&P futures were up 13 after selling off pretty good on the close last night, even because we had a huge day, the upside. We're up 13 now. Dow's up 137. S&P's are up 33. I mean, NASDAQ's up 33, so we're going to give it another shot. Markets are very interesting. We've had two big rally days in a row. Not as big at the end of the day. We probably lost 50% of the rally yesterday in the last 20 minutes. So nobody's real confident here that we're going to rally out back on up. Some people are. Obviously, we've got the election coming up, and everybody who, I keep thinking that there's always some intervention on the part of government, and there always seems to be. I don't know. Question is, you know, who wants what in? You've got a president tweeting, if you want your save your money, you got to vote Republican because the market will go down if you don't. And yet another example of the big lie. Lou, how are you?
Good. Good morning. I was gonna ask you how the almost frenetic tenor of the discussions that are going on right now on Twitter and social media about the and on the on the TV about the election, how all that affects the market, because I don't think I recall things being quite this crazy, except maybe right after President Trump was elected.
Right. Yep. Well, yeah, it was a huge swing around night there.
So I'm just wondering if what you're seeing is reflecting, and it must reflect the crazy commentary that's coming out on in advance of this election, and the race baiting and the demagogic comments about, this is going to happen, that's going to happen. I'm guessing that fuels a certain amount of uncertainty in people's minds that causes them to move their stocks. I'm guessing that's more volatility rather than one particular direction right now.
Well, actually, to be perfectly blunt, people that are on the air talking about volatility, I don't think they have a clue what they're talking about, Lou. No, I mean, nobody does.
I certainly don't. So that I just look at this again as from a layman. I don't have any insight in this at all. I just look at this and think, if I was an investor in sort of the general stock market, I would look at this and go, yeah, I think I need to move some stuff into bonds, or I need to move some stuff into gold, or I need to move some stuff out of the market, which could reflect in one direction or another, could reflect a real issue depending on what happens.
Well, my answer to you categorically is yes, all of the above. I don't think I've ever seen a time
which
like
is exactly the kind of incisive analysis we're used to here on Stocks and Jocks.
You know what? The interesting part, though, Lou, is actually very incisive, because when the revaluation that's occurring, when I say revaluation, on the interest rate moves, we're at extremes. I talk about this, every day, but it also is part. It is an everyday discussion. 1982, going back to a long time ago, when interest rates were 12-15%, the only direction they were going to go is one way. And then when they went the other way down, it means that all your fixed assets that were producing income, stocks, whatever it is, houses, they were only going to go one way, and that was up. Because if something is, the interest rates are 12%, and a house is, six flats trading for 150 grand, and it's pumping out $100,000 a year in income, guess what? At 5%, it's worth one hell of a lot more than 150 grand, right? I mean, there's no doubt about that. And that happened, I'm going to say, somewhat in a political vacuum. I mean, Reagan was in. I mean, it wasn't like we were heading the other way, and the interest, Volcker had been doing his thing. You didn't have tweets. You didn't have all this other crap kind of on top of it. So on one level, this is like a five-level chain here, on one level, that's going on. You've gone from a 10-year rate of under 2 at some point to 3.25, probably on its way to 3.75 or something. You've got an inflation building up, and the only people that don't believe it is the government. But everybody else believes it. And so worldwide, you've got this ridiculous negative interest rate going in Europe that they're going to be done with within the next year. That they're moving up. They're moving, not moving up like we are, but they're moving up percentage-wise. I don't even, what's the percentage? What is the percentage move from negative half a point to positive a half a point? 4 times infinite or what?
I mean, I don't know, but it's a big number.
Yeah, and so you've got all that going on. Then you've got the politics of it, and you've got another example of, and I know Kevin hates it when I do this, when I talked about Adolf Hitler and the big lie in Mein Kampf. One of the biggest lies in the investment world is that the market does better when Republicans are in office.
Yeah, I don't see that being reflected. Again, from my perspective as a layman, just watching the volatility of the market, it looks to me, and when I say volatility, I'm not talking about the VIX, I'm talking about just the up and down direction. I look at this from the perspective of the market mirroring, you know, political discourse, and a certain amount of uncertainty overseas, because while, you know, we have a lot of people engaging in crazy talk in this country, I'm not sure that, you know, the country's going to swing monstrously in you know, one direction as a result of this election or any election, really. But foreign policy, you know, what happens overseas, we don't have any control over, and that's the kind of unanticipated move, and I've mentioned this before, the kind of unanticipated move that I think could really swing the market. And that, there's some relatively disturbing stuff, some good stuff, but some relatively disturbing stuff that's going on right now that I think would be telling people, you know, you need to look outside the, you know, the navel gazing, excuse me, it's early here, that's going on within our own culture at our own political winds. And I'm talking about something as bizarre as China arresting the head of Interpol and presumably executing him. He's gone.
Really?
I don't know how much attention that's gotten, but boy, that's a marker.
Well, Lou, I it's not up to be. I'll be perfectly blunt. I can't stand a man as an individual or president. As a president, he's done some good stuff and he's done some bad stuff. But I'm going to think that the head of the free world, a lot of the stuff that's going on around the rest of the world right now, I don't know how much, Lou, I can't quantify it, but I'm going to say the two guys I thought were pretty good on foreign policy, I'm going to say if you got a John Kennedy or a Bush 1 who knew an awful lot about the rest of the world being a CIA guy and everything, I'm going to say if those guys are in office, there's a different tone we set than we're setting with this guy. It's a massively different tone.
I absolutely agree. And one of the dangers with a guy who is a chaos manager, and that's the way I see the president right now. He's one of these guys who manages by, or maybe a chaotic manager is the word I'm looking for, or phrase I'm looking for, who manages by introducing, you know, more instability, more anger or resentment. I would say, maybe that's not the right word. He introduces managerial upset. He introduces upset in the elites that comprise our political system. One of the dangers of a guy who does that is exactly what's happening now. And if I'm a Chinese or a Russian or Iranian operative, I love this. The American people are not paying attention as to what's going on outside.
Oh, I'm not going to accuse. You almost can't get the information, Lou. And if you wanted to, there's so much going on here. There's so much going on with your family and kids. How do you have time? How do you shove it into your head?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't have any particular insight. I'm flagged on certain, you know, certain news feeds that cover areas of interest to me, and I've always been at least as interested in foreign policy and foreign politics as I am in our own, simply because of what I mentioned earlier, the potential of that kind of an event to simply turn,
but Lou,
turn our world on its ear.
You're a Navy guy, a JAG lawyer who somehow didn't meet what's her name, and you Air Force, well, but he was a JAG guy. You're an Air Force guy, but you were a JAG guy.
But I was an operational flyer
I understand
part of my
it.
Career.
But you've also spent time around the world. You have a much better feel of how things interact than the average person sitting at his duff in Chicago like me.
I wouldn't say that. What I would say is I have a particular interest in it, and that's because I you're a student of history. Pearl Harbor,
yep.
The invasion of Korea, the Gulf of Tonkin, this kind of stuff, 9/11, this kind of stuff can turn us, 180 degrees from whatever direction we were going, and, as a nation, as a culture. And if you're not paying attention to what's happening outside our borders, you can easily fall into this trap of just thinking that everything is revolving around, you know, the president's latest tweet storm, and it doesn't. And I just that's the kind of stuff that I've always worried about with respect to things like investments or the market or anything. No matter how much predicting we do about what, you know, our industries are doing or what our regulatory structure is going to look like, the truth is that can all be set aside and blown up in one morning if Russia, for example, decides that they've really had it and they're going to take the Baltic states back, or the Chinese decide that you know they've really had it with Taiwan's belligerence and they're going to invade the island.
Well, I'm going to say that say two things. That the style the president has, and I've said this before because I'm a Star Trek guy, is amazingly two-dimensional, which I think is seriously flawed. I mean, he's a guy that has done, you know, a bazillion real estate deals. But a real estate deal is just a deal with one person. I'm gonna bet what you were talking about earlier, that any real estate deal the man ever had, if he didn't threaten to pull out after it was signed at least once or twice to get $50 out after the guy and make the thing 10 times more complicated, he's suing this and that, just to get some little edge, even if it's 1 or 2%, he wasn't happy. Okay, that's my read of the man, and I don't think most people would disagree with that. Now, I'm on a totally opposite end of the spectrum. I'm in the OEX pit, and on a busy day, I'm doing 350 trades by hand. Okay, and I'm writing them up. If you didn't do a deal in a nanosecond and say that was the deal and go on to the next one and not accuse the guy of being a bleep or blood or this or that or threaten to pull out if the guy, 2 minutes later, if the guy didn't drop the price in eight, you couldn't have operated like that, Lou. I mean,
I think it might even go deeper than that, Chief. And this is one of the reasons why I was, you know, I was so down on him as a candidate, and I still worry. I worry a lot about you know, decision making on others in other arenas. I think he's one of those guys that has to win at everything. He has to get some kind of advantageous position in every one of his transactions, and I don't know whether he's thinking strategically or you know, playing in a two-dimensional game when everybody else is playing three. My take though is that he is absolutely driven by this competitive urge to make everything a contest and to make everything come out in such a way that he can say, "I beat you."
But it doesn't
matter whether I got $50 more out of you on you know, on a deal, or whether I got, you know, 10 cents on a golf bet. It doesn't matter. I think that's his perception of the world. Now, psychologically, I don't know one way or the other, and I'm not sure if that's an accurate read, but if that's his mindset, then I think that gives us at least some explanation for the way he plays these things. And again, I come back to the concern that I have. One, that his style in doing that, in working that kind of competitive angle, is to introduce sort of a chaotic managerial environment. And while that may work well for this winning kind of outlook that he has, I think it is dangerous in the sense that, for whatever reason, our mainstream press, and even the non-mainstream press, simply cannot turn away from watching him.
Right.
They can't. They
well,
don't
neither can
focus
neither
on
can the
else.
Neither can the 10% on the extreme right and the 10% on the extreme left. Every tweet has to be answered.
Yeah,
every tweet.
I agree, and I mean a classic example is this Khashoggi thing, and I don't want to rediscuss all this that we talked about it last week. It, of course, and ask yourself, by the way, why that's disappeared off the.
Lou, that's why I can't wait. One of the reasons why I can't wait to have you on every Thursday, I cannot believe the amount of stuff that's off the page. If it wasn't for Kevin sending me stuff and doing some research, which the guy always does, and I thank him like every other, should thank him more, but it'll go to his head. If he didn't dig me up some stuff about Honduras and those places down there, Lou, we got, how can the, not 20% of the news and the BS going on in Washington has to do with this caravan that, by the way, is not even going to make it. They're already falling out. After 800 miles, they're already dying. How could somebody not say, here's what's going on in Honduras, here's where these people are coming? Why doesn't anybody, the Tribune, the New York Times, the Post, anybody, have a serious article written by somebody from God knows who, the Financial Times or someplace, saying, what's going on down there? If Kevin didn't dig it all out for me, I have no idea. We don't know what's going on in Ukraine. We don't know what's going on in,
So look at the Khashoggi thing, and there's a great piece that was just published in Tablet, and I tweeted it out before we came on the air. Maddie can find it about the way the press got played by the Turkish information operations work to damage the alliance with Saudi Arabia, and the way they did it is because they made it they put the story out in such a way so that, you know, the Trump people would have to, you know, Saudi Arabia is a Trump ally and they're all horrible people. Okay. The Khashoggi thing is awful. But in the big, you know, big ticket sense, a story that is much more meaningful is what China did with this head of Interpol. And if you haven't followed that story, I suggest people get in and look at that, because that is a truly stunning development with respect to how China views itself in the world and how you know China looks at the international legal order. It's really bad.
Well, Lou, the thing with the, and again, I think we're talking, the original question was like, what about the market? And what I'm saying is there's all these kinds of things entering, and I don't ever remember having so many different fingers, for lack of a better term, go into any decision I make as a trader or anything else. I mean, the thing we're talking about, we're talking about a guy in Saudi. The first thing he does is basically imprison everybody here that we know, Alawid and everybody else, and basically tortures them in a hotel that you can't go stay in anymore for, what, 6 months, 5 months, something like that. And the thing drops off the page due to inattention. Yet the guy manages to get what he gets out of these guys or whatever. He got their safety or their account numbers or something in Switzerland, and he got what he got, and he cuts deals, and I don't know how many of them died, how many of them are missing an arm.
But you know why the mainstream press let him go, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Because he let women drive.
Yeah, but he totally lets them go under the guise of some kind of reform, like you say. Well, and I think, Lou, to be perfectly blunt, and I talk about it all the time, once the story get passed, there's no such thing as a six-month story in any of our papers. We're so happy to forget about those people being tortured after a week, we can't keep it on the front, second, third, tenth page. Now, all of a sudden, 6 months later, a year later, there's another outrageous event, and all of a sudden we're kind of jacked back to consciousness and going, oh, no, the guy's at it again. By the way, whatever happened to those people in the hotel? You know,
yeah, this is the essence of that Tablet article, which says that the press, so much of the press, has become part of the, quote, resistance, unquote, that their focus is just on damaging the president. And the Turks played that up beautifully with this Khashoggi thing. Just ask yourself, what happened to Christine Ford? She's gone. She disappeared.
Well, that's part
her
of it.
Usefulness.
That's part of it, Lou. On one side, You've got
her usefulness to the press as a weapon to damage Trump has disappeared, and now it's time to grab on to the next thing we can. It is fascinating to me to watch that, and to the extent that it causes us to be completely diverted from what really matters is to my mind a stunning issue.
Well, every time one of us comes up with a point, there's another point. If I'm part of the press, there is such a person. If there's an 80-year-old editor of the Washington Post or the Times or the Tribune or you name it, that by and large, over a period of his lifetime, is trying to do the best he can and put the news out there, and all of a sudden you got some guy that comes in and somehow or another he gets an office, and he's telling me that I'm the biggest enemy of this state ever, up there with Stalin, or he was our ally, Hitler, Mussolini, Tojo, that he's not worried about foreign armies, he's worried about the press. What are you coming after me for? I put out a newspaper. Now, all the people who work for me, and if you have any testosterone left in your body, you're going to say, the hell with this schmuck. Every little thing he does that's wrong, I'm going to put it on the front page. Why wouldn't you?
Well, and of course, so I'll just throw out the chicken and egg.
Well, that's right.
In my mind, the attacks on Trump started Trump going after the press.
And he's got the thinnest skin of any person that's ever been in that office.
That may very well be true. But you cannot deny that what was happening in the run up to the election was a wholesale, complete abandonment by the mainstream press, and by that I mean the press that plays to the our elites, WashPo, the New York Times, the L.A. Tribune, the Chicago Tribune, that dumping on him unabashedly, just basically stepping away from their roles as, neutral reporters of facts, careful reporters of facts, and spinning everything into this anti-Trump position. And at that point, the president goes, okay, you know what, the heck with you.
Well, obviously,
I'm gonna hammer you. Now, what he said actually was that the press wasn't the enemy of the people. He said the people putting out the fake news media, is the enemy, or are the enemy.
But if the man, I would be very upset being called the fake news when all I have to do is run the guy's tweets for the last 2 years, and there's 50 lies a day in there.
You're not going to get, I'm not going to jump on that, try to defend the president. I didn't vote for him, but I'm just saying this is we are in the middle of a very vicious cycle, and again, somebody who's very thin-skinned, somebody who is on this winning, winning kick. I've got to win it, win all these transactions, and so I think that turns our perception, and he plays off that. I mean, just think about it, Chief. The president plays the press like an ocarina.
Yeah, he does.
At the stage.
He does.
He really does.
But you have people who on the right. And it's interesting. Being Irish, half Irish, obviously most of my life, the Irish, the Protestants and the Catholics were fighting, right?
Now, in Northern Ireland they were.
Well, sure, but basically we're fighting, and some were fighting against the English.
I haven't noticed any assaults on the United Methodist Church by the Catholic Church in Chicago, for example.
No. What I'm saying is, which side were you on? Who shot the first bullet? That the one guy, it's like the Jewish.
It's the Hatfields and the McCoys.
So which side you felt was correct, and who was the person who was returning fire, was totally which side you were on.
I mean, in that war, I always voted for the Catholics because they had better food.
Right. But I mean, you could right now. I mean, there are people on the right.
I mean, if you go to an Irish wake, the food is spectacularly good.
Oh yeah, well, if you and I put Chief Lou Maddie Press, and on the first page, all we did was list Trump's tweets from one day versus another day. The Fed is helping Obama by doing this and the other thing. Right? They should be independent. I love higher interest rates. The interest rates are too low, and all of a sudden, 2 years later, you don't even have to write the article. Just put the guy's stuff next to each other. There'd be people who would tell you that's fake news when they're his quotes.
Could well be. But I mean, I love the fact, and I mean, it's fascinating to me that he diverts with one tweet. he's got people spinning up now over this birthright citizenship issue, and I was going, oh, okay. And this caravan, I mean, the press, we've sent a bunch of troops down to the southern border. The press is desperately reporting this, you know, like some you know, this is some crazy awful thing that's about to happen, which of course puts more attention on the thing that the president wants to focus on.
There's
for
no
the
doubt.
Midterm elections, which is his positions on illegal immigration.
There's no doubt, Lou. Hey, when we got 30 seconds, when we come back, let's dig into the part about the market again, because this whole thing with General Motors yesterday and a big run up and so forth, and I'm pissed at myself I wasn't along. Well, I've been along GM and Ford, I'm going to say, Lou, 15 times in the last 3 years, and I've never made a dime. And all of a sudden, yesterday, they all go up. S&P futures up 1375. Dow futures up 145. We're going to make a run at a rally again today. Oil down 46 cents. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, Lou Michaels. He's Matt Weber on the board. Matty, I don't think I can. He's got a message from one of my Notre Dame pals. Not they're most of them all conservative, but not this dude. And I don't know, it'd be too much of a shot against the Republicans if I read the message. Just saying. S&P futures up 1375. Dow futures up 145. NASDAQ futures up 34. Oil down 46 cents. This is the guy who worked for NOAA and was telling me about global warming all these years. And now that thing came out yesterday about the oceans are 60% warmer than we thought they were or something. I don't know if you read that or not. DAX up 94.8%, FTSE up 31.4%, CAC around up 18.3%. Over in Asia, we've got, actually, Nikkei came back down some, made a huge move up yesterday, down 232, it's 1%, back under 22,000, 21,687, Shanghai up 3, call that flat, Hang Seng catching up, because they weren't as up as much as the rest of the gang yesterday, up 437, 1.7, so, moving to the upside pretty much worldwide. We'll see how far this bounce comes. I don't think we're going to go all the way back to a little high or anything like that, but we will see. Oil up down 46 cents, 64.85. Brent, 74.26. That's down 78 cents. So the spread is, we're back down almost like 9.40. So that's lower. Natural gas, look at this, 3.29. That's the highest we've seen that in probably years. Our Bob going the other way, so be careful. When you look at these energy stocks, they're probably going to be down a little bit today because of the oil, but they also do a lot of gas stuff, and the gas prices are up. So that's when I say gas, natural gas. Gold up $10, making a bounce up today because the dollar is down. Silver up 13 cents. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Compared to the last couple of days, we're off to a pretty good start as far as traffic is concerned, but we do have one major concern. That's on the south side. Happened earlier this morning, 8094 eastbound, just before Torrance Avenue. We have a multi-vehicle crash involving a rollover and a vehicle fire, one ejection. Three left lanes are blocked on 8094 just before Torrance, and crews and emergency crews are on the scene there. So that's going to be a while, and then an investigation will certainly ensue. That's right near the Indiana-Illinois border. So keep that in mind on 8094, but it is on the Illinois side. And that's been going on for the better part of the morning and will continue throughout the morning commute. Everything else looking okay out there. No issues at all on the Dan Ryan, I-57 or the Bishop Ford. Normal traffic volumes on the Stevenson and Eisenhower. Northside expressways are looking good. Suburban tollways are all quiet. Weather today, cloudy, much cooler than it's been the last couple of days. In fact, our high is where we're at right now, 51 degrees. We'll drop into the upper 40s later on. And cloudy throughout the day. Right now it's overcast and 51, and that's your high. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 78 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 54. In sports, after getting completely embarrassed on Monday night, the Bulls actually had a late lead against Denver, blew it, went into overtime, had a one-point lead, and then gave up a last-second tip-in to lose by one to the Nuggets, 108-107 in overtime. Bulls are 2-6 on the year. Suns were blown out by the Spurs at home, 120-90. In hockey, Blackhawks had an early lead, gave that up, and then surrendered two third-period goals, and they lost to the Canucks 4-2. Hawks have lost three straight. And in sad news, Hall of Famer and San Francisco Giants legend Willie McCovey passed away yesterday. He was 80 years old. And we got some tweets on Willie McCovey. Natachi with a good story here. He says, Willie McCovey was a class guy.
Absolutely.
Once in Wrigley Field, McCovey signed a ball for me. He saw that I was looking at Juan Marichal, who was not signing autographs that day. So he asked me if I want Marichal's autograph too. I said yes, and he carried my ball over to him and had him sign it. It's pretty cool.
I think Stretch was one of the classiest dudes. And interesting, when Lou Brock, obviously the base stealing, one of the base stealing gurus of his time, really, of any time, he said, well, how come you don't take that big of a lead off? And he goes, because I don't really want people thrown over there. And he goes, how come? He goes, if you're diving back into first base and Stretch McCovey's playing first base and he's the biggest man that ever walked, he catches the ball and he whacks you on the back, you might as well get hit by a bull. Because the last thing you want is him tagging you five times. It's like somebody hitting you with a 2x4. And the guy didn't even, it was nothing on purpose. He just was that big and strong.
Oh, man. So my dad texted me last night, and he said his first baseball memory was at Old Sportsman Park down in St. Louis. Him and my grandfather, his dad, went down there for a game for some reason. And they were playing the Giants, and he said, I swear to God, Willie McCovey check swinged and hit a home run to right field on a check swing. He's like, I swear, I've never seen it before, I've never seen it since, but he hit a check swing home run over right field.
They had some, at that time, look at all the big, huge men they had playing. Well, who's the guy that played up? Frank Howard? I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a guy that big play since. What's he, 6'8", 6'9", about three? I mean, he was a huge guy. There were a few others that were pretty, I mean, they're big, big dudes. I mean, not that you don't have a few guys now, but Willie was, Willie Stargell was a big man. Dave Parker was a big man.
Tommy.
Yeah.
Well, modern day, there's a ton of huge guys, especially in the 90s.
Yeah, a lot of huge guys, like Killebrew. Killebrew was big.
But I'm saying, you don't get too many guys. When you start getting 6'7", 6'8",
yeah.
Even today, you don't see...
Aaron Judge is
he's big man.
He's a monster. Yeah. But yeah, there's not a ton.
Let me just throw out one other guy who passed away, and somebody I knew very well, Jack Patera, who was the defensive line coach when my father was the offensive line coach with the Vikings. Jack is the guy that developed the Purple People Eaters group up front. Very creative defensive coach. He then went on to coach the head coach with the Seattle Seahawks. I believe he was their first head coach. Terrific guy. I know Jack, and my thoughts and condolences are out to his family and to his kids, who I sort of grew up with when he was with the Vikings. So he passed on. His brother, Ken, who I believe is still alive, was the U.S. super heavyweight weightlifting guy for the Olympics for a number of years. And still, I mean, Jack was a terrific athlete. He, like a lot of guys later in years, put some weight on. But his brother, kind of looked like Alexeyev, the Soviet champion for many years. He was a little over 300 pounds, about 6'4", but I watched him from a standing jump stuff a basketball because his legs were so strong. And
that's unreal.
Just a tremendous, well, two tremendous, tremendous all-around athletes. But anyway, Jack passed away yesterday.
You know who else died last week? Not in the sporting world, but if you ever came from a big family, anywhere in the country, and you always had an aunt that never invited anybody over and always brought a dish, the lady who invented the green bean casserole.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
1955.
Like it's in French's Test Kitchen or something?
Campbell Soup's Test Kitchen.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I
love green bean casserole, by the way.
Well,
a lot of people don't like it. I think it's great.
Well, you know what the difference is, Maddie? In those days, they actually called for, and there wasn't near as many fresh vegetables. When I remember growing up, we didn't have any frozen vegetables. Nobody had a freezer. You know, let's put this, that generation of women were not used to having freezers.
So, Chief actually remembers them hauling the blocks of ice out of the lake in Wheaton and putting them in those sawdust covered barns.
Yeah, what do you mean you didn't have a freezer, for God's sake?
What I'm saying is when... My point is that...
Sometimes you act like you're 120.
No. What I said was, is when I was younger, like my grandmother and aunts, that genre, they either had fresh vegetables or they used canned. They weren't used to having a freezer full of frozen vegetables.
That's the truth, because freezing technology and shipping technology
right.
was not nearly as well developed. But I had a freezer.
Right. Oh, no, I don't. I was in a freezer, too. Sure.
You had ice cubes.
No, no, absolutely. I get that. But I'm saying is those that generation of women that cook most of the time and that thing, they did not normally have think of frozen vegetables. I mean, it was either canned or fresh. And the original canned green beans in the casserole, I thought it was pretty awful. But now that people make it with fresh beans, I love it. There's a huge difference.
If you dump enough of those fried onions on top of the thing,
that was the
secret.
Oh, God, yeah.
That's the key, the fried onions, man. That's the key.
I can remember my mother saying, now, you know Sally's going to bring over to Green Bee Castle. You at least got to taste it, and don't act like you don't like it. I read this lady died, and all I could think of is how many Thanksgivings and Christmas did I have to at least take a bite out of this stuff just to – anyway.
So, by the way, before you guys move on, we have a bunch of tweets here that I wanted to run through real quick. First, Kevin says, took till 6:10 a.m. before Chief's first Hitler reference.
Well.
I had 6:10, so I won.
He also said, Irish wakes have food. I vaguely remember whiskey, but food?
They would,
the Irish Catholic wakes that I've attended in Philadelphia, and some other places, the food was spectacular.
Joe writes in, and you can follow us on Twitter at StocksLetterNJocks. He says, Harmon Killebrew was only listed at 6'195" and was probably actually 5'10".
I just remember watching Killebrew play for the Twins when I was growing up, and he looked like a barrel.
He had arms like Popeye, didn't he?
Well, you know who was bigger on that team was Bobby Ellison was huge, and Frank Howard. They were all on the same team, right?
Yeah, so I don't know when... I would not have put Mr. Killebrew at 195. He looked a lot heavier than that, at least when I saw him play. So,
what about the guy who played for the Sox in the '59 that had to tear the shoulders out of the uniform because his shoulders were too big? He couldn't fit him in the shirt. Tell us his name. Ted Kluszewski.
I don't remember him.
Dig up a picture of the '59 Sox, and you'll see a guy with the sockets of the arm or the sleeve torn out because his shoulders are too big to get in there.
By the way, let me run off of my ADHD running wild this morning. I've just worked my way through David Halberstam's books on baseball, the summer of 40 or fall of 48, the summer of 49, and summer of 64. Fascinating accounts, and Maddie, you can find the reference. Fascinating accounts of baseball. Just as TV and the revenue stuff and just before free agency started to kick in, it is really an interesting read. If you are interested in not just the history of baseball but the history of sports and how the game changed with two things. First, the wholesale use of African American baseball players and basically the breakup of the old Negro leagues. And the flood of those people coming into the leagues and how the leagues adjusted to that. And then the second thing was the flood of TV money. Really interesting reads.
Local TV was early.
Say again?
National TV money was real late. Local money was early.
Yes, right. And he talks about that. He notes how in certain markets, you know, there was this extra cash for certain clubs because they had cut deals first with radio, and then with television.
But the TV of was well, I was such a baseball nut. I watched it every night after I was seven. I started playing Pee Wee League, for God's sake. But it was a totally different world. I mean, it was Jack Brickhouse. They had basically they always had Channel 9 to their credit. Had the greatest advancements in watching baseball in terms of when a guy hit a line drive from the plate, they were able to switch cameras. You can see the guy catching at third. That was guys that did it were like Jack Rosenberg. They had reflexes like baseball players. They did all that by hand. They would switch cameras.
What I find really fascinating is this throwback argument that, you know, for a number of owners, baseball owners, some of these guys were really cheap SOBs.
Oh, good idea.
Did not want to go with TV because they thought that it was going to cheat their ticket holders.
Well, duh. Wirtz hasn't been dead that long. He did that to 5 years ago or 8 years ago.
Well, that's what I mean. I remember, I thought, wait a minute, the Blackhawks had the same yeah. had the same problem into this century.
That couldn't be a worse level of thinking. I mean, that's just so it seems like common sense now, but that is such an idiotic way of looking at the world.
But it's so funny that I was reading this, and this is in the 1940s,
yeah.
you know, the late 1940s and early 1950s, and these owners are saying, "Yeah, we don't want to do this, and it's going to cheat our fans." And I'm kind of, "Oh man, this mentality was still around in like what 2009 when Wirtz was running the Blackhawks."
Yep.
Well, I mean, it comes out to why give it away? Essentially, is what you're doing.
Well, except you know, I guess that's the thought process. But you're not giving it away because the advertisers are paying.
Yeah. Have you idiots ever heard of commercials?
Okay, but,
have you heard of why the Cubs are so popular? Because of TV in the 80s.
Before you guys, you know, get off, and before Matty Weber talks only of a world that he knows, which all any of us can do, by the way, not just him.
Well, you look at the freezers.
But look at the attendance figures. In what people consider to be the golden age of baseball, 1958-59. I'm going to say the Cubs, the Brooklyn Dodgers, the New York Giants barely pushed over a million people. Sox probably didn't. Yankees a little better. I mean, you had massive people in New York where freaking 8 million people live, and you're talking about the Brooklyn Dodgers were so beloved, they never drew them, they drew a million one. I mean,
well, part of that was their stadium.
Well, but I mean, it's part of it was, a lot of it was day baseball. People worked, like Lee Elias said, to people who don't have a job, come out here. I mean, you didn't get, I mean, people didn't have the dough. My Audrey's dad, who died a few years ago, was one of the greatest White Sox fans ever. He worked in one of those horrible factory places, like a block from the, he never went in the park. They'd listen outside. People didn't have the money to take a day off and go play baseball.
By the way, 1958, they had 16 teams. Only 8 of them drew over a million fans.
Am I right?
So that's half.
Yeah.
Who do you think drew the biggest amount of fans?
I'm going to say it probably was either the Yankees or the Cardinals.
No, not even close. The Milwaukee Braves.
Wow.
They drew almost 2 million fans, 1.97. The L.A. Dodgers, who I think that was their first year, 1958.
There literally was nothing else to do in Milwaukee.
Yeah. They drew 1.8, and no one else drew over 1.3. Pittsburgh was third most. San Francisco Giants, who I think that was their first year.
But I think that that's a fake on the – not a fake. I think that was when the team moved there from Boston, was close to that time. It went in about 5 years. I think they were down to like 800,000.
I think you might be right. The Cubs that year drew 980,000. The White Sox drew 797,000.
Whenever the Cubs went over a million, Brickhouse was ecstatic.
The Red Sox drew just over a million. The Yankees drew 1.4.
I think that baseball has very, you know, did a number of very intelligent things. And Chief's right. The night games made a big difference. They renovated their stadiums, all except the Cubs. They did a number of things, and TV, the TV stuff was huge because now you had exposure to, and I think you see this with the NFL now all the time because there are so few games, but it's become a little bit of a status thing to go to a game, and you know, yeah, anybody can watch it on TV, but to see it in person, that's become a bit of a status thing. And it's definitely that for the NFL, but I see it out here with the Rockies regularly. That yeah, I'm going to a baseball game, and that's a great evening here.
Well, I used to take Lou. I would take the bus ride from the South Side. Took me longer than the game in those days.
When I was, I bet that took forever.
Oh God, yeah, Western Avenue all the way from 103rd Street.
Why didn't you take the bus to the L and then go shoot straight up?
Left to my own devices, I would, but the L was in, shall we say, the other neighborhood.
Yes.
And my mother was always, I grew up essentially in that neighborhood, she had no problem with it. We're talking age 12 here now.
Right. Okay. It's a different
and,
time.
She had no problem with it, but the neighbors, the kids who went with me, their parents were, as long as you stay on the bus, it's okay.
Got it.
But I'm going to say that the difference in the – it's hard to even imagine, Manny, that for you, the difference in the infrastructure of sports on TV. You had Wide World of Sports. on Saturday, which covered pretty much everything, okay, boxing and you name it. But, you know, there was Saturday night fights, but there was none of this infrastructure of 50, I use the term, blithering idiots on the bench waiting for a game to show up in their suit with eight of them before a game. When Willie Mays made the huge catch in the World Series, guess who made that call?
Jack Buck?
It was not his turn. Jack Brickhouse.
Okay, yeah.
They took the two or three best local people and hired them for the World Series because the Channel 2, Channel 5, CBS.
That was Brickhouse, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't have any of their own people. So one year would be Jack Buck, one year would be Brickhouse, and then who's the Dodger guy?
Scully.
They'd pick one of those guys to do it. They didn't have anybody.
Yeah, when ESPN rolled out, I remember thinking to myself, this is going to be great because I'll be able to see football highlights without having to wait. The only way I could watch football highlights regularly was the HBO show that did the weekly show, This is the NFL or whatever it was, This Week in the NFL. HBO had a show that covered every football game and showed the highlights from every game. And that was the only way you could watch it. And I remember thinking when ESPN came on, I thought, thank God, maybe I'll be able to see football highlights someplace other than on HBO.
I will say, I know Chief thinks, he must think I'm like 16, but...
No, you were when I met you.
What we have today is still relatively new. I mean, when I was growing up in the 80s and the early 90s, we didn't, like, until you had cable, which most people didn't have until the late 80s or early 90s.
Chicago, later than that.
Yeah. It was the same thing. You got the WGN Cubs games, and you got, if you had cable, you got the TBS Braves games. That was it. No one had ESPN until you had cable. You just had the local game, and that was it. It's not like, you know, obviously like it is today. So, you know, I'm not saying it was the same as only having wild world of sports, but... It wasn't that far off.
Manny, this will come as a complete shock to you, but you're always going to be young to me.
Well, I hope so.
Hey, Lou, I got a question. We have a few minutes left. General Motors yesterday. Let's get back to the market because we started the show talking about various things that are happening with the market. You've got a revaluation going on. You got politics going on. You've had a period of time where the Fed, you know, covertly or overtly has essentially pumped asset values up, and now we're getting a little bit of a pushback the other way. So all this stuff is happening kind of at once, which I've never really seen before. So that's why I've been pretty tight-lipped with my predictions. I think that we probably have seen a bottom here for a little while, but that doesn't mean it's going to be a V-shaped bottom. My question is, look at the different levels of stuff we've been talking about. Look at the GM earnings yesterday. They come out, they make $1.87 a share. We're talking about a stock that's trading $35. So if these guys make like $7 in a year, I mean, for God's sake, what is that, 5 times earnings? And yet we've got Amazon, who doesn't make as much money, was $2,100, then it gets down to under $1,500, now it's back to 17-something. And people are all of a sudden deciding, you know, maybe we can't hold on to this thing forever until Jeff Bezos decides to send us a check, which he never will. And then you've got even some of my clients saying, well, if I got $1 million, I'm going to put $100,000 or $200,000 in a T-bill for 6 months and just wait for a while. So there's all kinds of things happening. Now look at these GM earnings yesterday. They come out. Now, we have a population that's supposedly doing better. Economy's so spectacular. You know, pick a 1% and a thing is most spectacular he's ever seen for him. Now, for other people, maybe not so much. The other day, the... income level was only up 0.2% last month. That's not very good, Lou. We've got inflation perking a lot all over the place. Well, they came out and they say General Motors made, due to price increases, now whether tariffs are part of this, whether the threat of tariffs are part of this, I don't know. They made $605 more per truck last year than they did the year before. That's how much they made, Lou. More. That's it. Now, okay, people are out buying these things and they're paying, obviously, out the behind for them. Now you swing back to the report, Manny, we did 6 months ago. This is not trucks, but it's cars. The average price of a new car is $31,000, and the average loan is $29,800. Now, okay, if people are out to buy these things that are way more expensive than they were, obviously they're not getting into the CPI at that number, but obviously the GM, with tariffs, without, is now acting like a true oligarch, okay, which they are. there's a lot of good in there, Lou. There's a lot of bad in there, Lou. Somebody buys a truck for $40,000 and gets a $38,000 loan. Do they even buy it? I mean, I don't know. Did they or didn't? I mean, we're right back into this, back into the, you know, the debt thing that just keeps growing by the day. Trump is going to have the world's greatest economy, in his own words. It's in the face it's ever happened in the world and maybe in the universe. And he's going to have a $1 trillion deficit. How the hell can that?
Well, we've got. I just saw that. That's another thing that's not being focused on because of the chaos that the president is generating, and the fact that the press just simply cannot not cover him.
Right.
We added something like $1.33 trillion to the debt recently. I mean that, and our tax collections are way up, but we cannot stop this spending, and that's going to bite us at some point.
How are our tax collections way up?
Doesn't servicing that stuff kill us?
Actually, the tax collections have had somewhat. Let's put it this way, Lou, because some of the tax from the money that was overseas is coming in at a lower rate than it should. The tax collections are actually up, but I think that's going to stop. That's what's caused the collections to be up.
It may very well. I mean, the other big factor is that unemployment is down, and wages. We finally got a bump in wages last quarter.
Okay, the unemployment's down by a couple hundred thousand people out of the unemployed column, and we put 50,000 people and put 200,000 in the not working column. I mean, the off the roll. Let's talk about that next week, Lou, because those numbers can fly around like there's no tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
S&P futures now up 12. Dow futures up 126. NASDAQ futures up 24. Have a good one, Lou. Talk to you next week. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Well, no, thanks, Dr. Jack. Time to out. Mr. Lou Michaels is gone. We have Mr. Fari Hamzy from Hamzy Analytics. We still have Mr. Matt Weber
good
on the board.
Good morning.
Or else you wouldn't be able to hear me if it wasn't for Matt Weber. S&P futures up 12, Dow futures up 126, NASDAQ futures up 24. All right, Matty, after much pondering over here, I'm going to have to read my email from my buddy. This is a friend of mine, my roommate in college, could have been easily one of the top five intelligent people I've ever met. Ended up becoming a chemist for National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Group and did all the DC-8 flights over the ozone holes and all that kind of stuff. Just a brilliant guy. In the last 10, 15
years... That's a very smart guy.
Yeah, the last 10, 15 years he's been zeroing in on where the oxygen in the world comes from with overflights of the jungles and everything. And he told me 10, 15 years ago that the global warming, the real problem is in the oceans. He goes, the air on over land... I mean, you could conceivably plant a lot more trees and you can equal out the oxygen versus the carbon dioxide. But the ocean seems to be absorbing it, doesn't seem to have any way to get rid of it. And the ocean is picking up the warming, not necessarily the air. So when somebody says it's cold outside, there's no global warming, he says basically they're an idiot. Because the global warming, if the oceans come up 1 degree, it's massive, massive difference. So yesterday they came out with this report that they have been miscalculating, and the oceans have actually got simulated 60% more of the global warming in the last 10 years than previously reported. So I sent him an email, and I go, his name's Tom as well. I go, hey, you told me about this 10 years ago. What a great communication department you guys have at your place. And he writes back, he goes, I told you about it 10 years ago, and it's truer now than it was 10 years ago. 48 years old, years ago, I told you something about Republicans. It was true then, and it's truer now.
Oh, geez. All right.
So there you have it. Because most of the rest of my buddies from college have kind of swung right, say this dude is not. So that's why I get it from both sides. That's why I'm firmly happy in the middle these days, you know, type of thing. So, although at some point you got to make a decision, you just can't lay in the middle. You got to make a mover.
Well, you got to vote for somebody.
Well, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem.
And I do hope, by the way, that all of our listeners, I bet our listeners vote at maybe the highest rate of any other show.
I would hope so.
But I do hope everyone gets out there either early or certainly on Tuesday.
They have to do better than me or you. You're in the same area. Where do you see the amount of people unopposed when you go there Tuesday, man?
Yeah, I know. I've gotten used to it at this point.
I actually wrote in a email, which I don't normally do, to one of the guys who wrote a column for the Trib yesterday, talking about how even if you don't like Pritzker or Rauner, it's important to get out and vote and do the same thing. You know, I don't usually do this, but I wrote back and I asked them to come on the show. I want to push back. It's not just. I mean, it's like in Russia. Go out and vote when there's only one guy voting. or one guy running. At some point, there needs to be a little more input in states like Illinois into the process.
Well, that's why you got to get out and vote in the primaries.
But, I mean, our primary is so late. I mean, for governor, I suppose you can, but I mean, our presidential primary is so late, they're already decided, and that's by design. I don't know why that is. Why we allow Iowa and New Hampshire to pick the president, I have no clue, but somehow we do. I mean,
we should randomize that.
Well, that's right.
I agree.
But, I mean, somehow or another... I've
told you guys, you're lucky I wasn't born here. I can fix this place in 2 weeks.
I could probably help you. I'd bring all the...
I don't need help.
I'd reread all my George Stigler books.
Go on, at 16. I don't need help.
Well, I would have the votes would be on a Sunday.
But I could have you as a special advisor. When I need you, I will contact you on a special phone because we have to keep you at an undisclosed location.
I would say we need one of those phones that are totally encrypted.
Yeah, well, there's a new one in Chicago. It's all my traders have. That trades actually, supposedly, we're assuming, because based on observations, it's tied to Goldman Sachs. Because they get yesterday's prices. Wouldn't you like to trade like that?
Yeah, well, the...
It's a red phone, but apparently they use a spray can.
Unbelievable.
I didn't tell you, Chief, the other day I was at a bar, you know, surprise, surprise, and with a couple of my buddies.
A library to serve drinks.
Yes.
Library services, yes.
Yes, exactly. And there was five or six guys that were probably 5 years, maybe 7 or 8 years younger than me, late 20s probably. And they were, of course, political ads come on the TV, and they're, you know, hemming and hawing about how much they hate Rauner and how much they hate Pritzker, but started talking, you know, in great detail about, you know, why basically each guy's history and why they don't like him. And I was kind of overhearing this, and I was like, wow, you guys are pretty engaged. And they're like, yeah, we actually ran the Daniel Biss campaign.
Really?
Yeah. And he's the guy who lost to Pritzker in the primary but got a lot of votes. And I was like, I actually voted for him in the primary. And they were like, well, thank you very much. And they thought they had a real chance. And then, but Pritzker, he spent $170 million of his own money.
Why do people, after seeing, not just the Trump phenomenon, but people who have had, you have to have this, be on a radio show, they're not going to put us in, I'm sorry, but you have to have this, people go with, I'll say the, what do you call people that are just out there in the news all the time?
Pundits?
No, I mean, how do you get to be a? Was the two women that are all in the press? And I don't even know who the hell they are. The two sisters. I mean, you become famous for being famous. I mean, once you get in, your name's talked about. You're this and that, the other thing. I mean, why Mark Cuban? Like he could run for office. Now, why would Mark Cuban be? He had a company and he dumped it to.
Our president is a reality TV show.
That's
game
exactly
show
my
host.
Point.
That's
what
that's
I'm
it. He's
I'm, that's what I'm.
He's president for being a celebrity.
I'm saying that's. But it's a point now. You almost can't. You can't be a regular Solomon and run. You have to have this media thing before you. I mean, Mark Cuban could win a lot quicker than a college professor. Why? Because he sold a company to someplace 100 years ago and they overpaid for it. I mean, but does that make him a genius? No. I mean, right? I mean, a team owner of a major league, they could run tomorrow easy. Ricketts could run, for God's sake. I mean, I'm saying, but people, why? Even though they know there's no sense to it, yet they'll vote for those guys. Everybody complains about Pritzker. But why do we have these two billionaires there? Why do people vote for him? But they did. Then they complain about it. I mean, we'd have to vote for Farrey because look how famous he is, for God's sake.
Easy, fella.
Pritzker, by the way, is up by like, isn't he up like 20 points on Rauner?
Yeah.
Something like that. I mean, who knows how accurate the polls are at this stage, but.
Well, but I mean, Rauner has shown that he can't do a whole lot. He's an old sourpuss. And Pritzker refused, and he's another Trump. And in terms of he won't tell you anything he's going to do, he has no plan other than taxing people. The amorphous tax the rich, which somehow 90% of the population figures there's going to tax, they're going to go up, but it's not going to be me, which is so ignorant, I can't even spit it out, it's so ignorant, because it's always you. How does anybody who's lived in this world more than about 4 weeks ever think that any new tax is going to be on somebody else other than you're an alderman? You're driven around in a limousine and you put a tax on parking downtown and you've never parked in your life. Other than alderman, who actually gets to tax everybody else but yourself?
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. I mean, other than an alderman who identifies the things he doesn't do and taxes it and other people, I mean, who else? I mean, do you honestly think that if this guy raises taxes and you have a business, you're not going to be part of it? I mean, give me a break. Anyway, Fari, what the...
By the way, Penny Pritzker had several offers to my sister for her to come and work for her, and she said no to Chicago. They've done a few deals back and forth, but my sister's a small size, not a small time, but a small size. Hospitality REIT operator.
Okay.
Used to work for KBH. Who was the KBH guy?
Oh, I know you're talking about. I know you're talking about.
KBH Homes. Who's the founder of that?
I'm not positive. Manny, why don't you see me and dig that
up? Yeah, but anyhow, he was also head of the American Jewish Congress,
anyway, whatever. Anyway, I was talking to Lou.
Donald Bruce Kaufman?
No.
Eli Broad?
Not Kaufman. Broad.
Eli Broad?
Yeah.
Eli Broad. Yeah, she used to work for Broad, and she was head of acquisitions, so did a lot of deals, and Pritzker had several offers to her, and she said, no, I'm not coming to Chicago. Heck with it. You keep the temperature. I'll stay in California.
So, Fari, I was talking to Lou earlier, and he brought up the, obviously stocks and jacks, subject of the market. And I said, I've seen revaluations in my time. Well, obviously the biggest one was in 1982 and since. I've seen politically charged markets. I've seen markets that have run up because of the Fed or down because of the Fed, and all of a sudden we start going the other way. I've seen the volatility up and down. Obviously, 87 was big in that. 2000 was big in that. I don't think I've ever seen them all at the same time before.
Yeah. Well, you have three issues this time, in my humble opinion. Maybe more, but at least three. One, you got the elections. One, you got the Fed. One, you got the trade wars. And there's a scenario for each of them to be bad, and there's a small chance each of them should be good, okay? So the weighing is more on the downside. I mean, some of the hedges I talk to, they say, this is like a head trader instructing to his people is you go 150, 1.5 to 1 or 2 to 1 short. So for every dollar you're long, you need to have $2 short. Until I tell you otherwise. But go and trade it. You know what I'm saying? Here's $2 billion. Go trade it, but this is your criteria. That's how you keep it. 2 to 1 short or 1.5 to 1 short. So, and then if you look at the bet sizes on the futures, both on NQ and ES, I don't know how we did yesterday because I've been a little bit ill, back and forth with the docs. The day before that, very clearly, the excited people were the mom and pops. The institutions were not.
Right.
Yeah, either it was flat or just slightly above zero line because of interest. The block sizes that matter. The big interest was mom and pop. So it was just like a relief rally. So, and if you believe in a retest failure in auction theory, there should be a retest of the lows before then. Otherwise, I mean, very, very close. You know, not 5 years ago. Yeah, you know, not 6 months ago.
Right.
We did break the lows on February low. On the SPX.
Right.
I believe the February lows were, I'm just bringing the charts up here. The close we did, but not the low. The low was 2532, on the closing basis was 2619. We get to 2603. So that's not a fair comparison. So it has to be low to low. Low to low never broke that. That was the February. But that's too far. Let's say we anchored down as of Monday. The low was, again, 2603, the close 2641. Both of those have to be tested. Let's say within a week or so or 2 weeks, and then that's the buy signal. If the test is successful. I'm willing to say better than even odds that, we're gonna take it out and go lower. Cause one of these three is gonna take over in a negative way. Trade wars, Fed, elections.
Well, sorry, I have issues.
I could be wrong, but that's my call.
As you probably can gather, I have this feeling that you're either in an economy where everybody's moving up sort of together. Some people always do better than others. That's okay. I mean, that's part of talent. That's part of education. That's part of luck of the draw. That's just the way the world is, okay?
Right.
Somebody's home run is going to be a foot over the wall, and somebody's going to be a foot short, and somebody's going to catch it. That's just the way the world is.
Right.
And,
yeah, we're not looking for that. No. Listen, I always tell my people, my flock, that we're not in the business of catching the very low or very high. We're in business of catching the trend. Okay?
Right.
So if this is a W issue, and we're in the first leg down, and we just came up. By the way, look at what happened yesterday in the last hour. The professionals sold it like there was no tomorrow. They sold, 200 points instantly?
It was like 60% of the rally in the last 15
minutes. You got the we're not going to go straight up. The low is not in. We're going to go and retest. When, how come? This has to be answered. It take 2 or 3 days, maybe take a week, maybe 2 weeks, less than a month, not more than a month, because then it's invalid. But 2 to 3 weeks, that period, look at the volume breakout, the ratio, the volume, the down volume to up volume ratio to breakout. That means to go up, okay? And see how it compared to Monday low, and then we may have a valid signal. At that point, you trowel up. That means you go in with a little bit of size now, with some confidence. We're not there. By the way, we have a webinar tonight that is almost oversubscribed. On the market timing, we'll talk about that more then. Matt, if you want, you can RT that. It's trivia on R2 there.
We also got a thing from Frank, a picture of Ted Kluszewski. I don't know if you saw that one, Matty.
Oh, yeah, we saw it.
And whenever
your man crush.
And this is my, this is my half empty, half full glass thing.
Okay.
I don't sense the economy really moving forward like people say it.
Right.
And
wage growth was a little bit better than I expected.
Well, it was last month.
Good news.
It was last month. Now this week.
I agree with you that we're just chugging along. Part of the problem is that we are we've created a lot of debt, and we're about to embark on probably the biggest deficit in the history of U.S. this fiscal year.
Yeah, I agree.
Why? The rates are going up. Sales are going. They're going to be pressured down on the revenue line and sales. And so the tax receipts will be lower. And then we have huge tax cuts out there. And they're about even talking about possibly doing extra tax cuts, which I don't know how they're going to do it.
They're not going to do it.
Until we're back in a session.
It's total before election BS.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like removing 14th Amendment. The problem is nobody challenges him, and enough people repeat it that you think it's truth. That's not the truth.
Well, Paul Ryan did, and he's all over Paul Ryan. So,
is what I'm saying?
He's all over Paul Ryan because Paul Ryan said you can't do that with
exactly. You cannot change. You need the majority of states or two-thirds of the states to vote with you. There's nothing the executive can do. Specifically, we have that so we don't have a Nazi Germany here.
Well, the interesting part is that I read something the other day about the two guys he just plunked on the Supreme Court. If that goes to the Supreme Court, it'll be interesting, even though they obviously have sworn, well, according to the guy who wrote the article, they've sworn allegiance to Trump on some level, Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, that there's no way that they can go with him on this one. Now,
you got to understand, you got to dial down your IQ with a couple of digits to buy all of this crap.
Well, all right, but my question
is that plain and simple?
Yeah. Well, all right. To get back to my market thing, I look at the General Motors stuff yesterday, and I've been listening. I mean, my brother Dan, head of PTI Securities, president.
Danny boy. Yes, go ahead.
Well, he's still playing a lot of softball in the winter, even. And one of the guys. One of the guys is
between the Brewskis, right?
Well, the Brewskis come after. You know, Brewski. You
after. Gotcha.
When you're 60 years old and you're playing 12-inch, and the ball's coming at you a million miles an hour, you don't want any brewskis.
I see, okay.
No, it could be very dangerous.
Post-game brewskis.
Post-game brewskis. And one of the guys who he plays with is in an auto glass business.
Gotcha.
And has been the family's third generation, for God's sake. Uh-huh. All of a sudden, last week, across the board, 10% price increase due to, quote, tariffs or some BS along the line. Now, you look at yesterday, I don't see anybody in this country except maybe somebody who's got a stock bonus, and even if it was last month, I don't know if that's going to work. I don't see anybody with a 10% raise anywhere. Do you? I mean, I haven't seen one of those in anybody I've ever talked to, unless there's a promotion involved. This week, GM comes out. We're celebrating. I'm pissed off I wasn't long. Stock goes up. I'd love to have had some options for me and my clients. I didn't. And all of a sudden, an hour after the numbers come out, they say, well, it's all due to increased pricing, and they made $605 more per truck last year. That's how much they raised the prices. Okay, and then now 2 months ago, Maddie and I reported that in virtually all new car sales, that the loan is now 85-90% of the price of the new car. Are we gaining or are we losing? It seems like we can't ever all gain together. The General Motors gain right. is somebody else's loss. The guy who sells if the car windows went up 5% and everybody got a 6% raise, I'd say that's America that I know. But I don't see that. Do you? I mean, I just don't.
Well, look at Boeing.
Yeah. So Boeing charges
that's
more.
That's a very good example.
They charge more and more and more. That's supposed to be good
for me. And
look
how they sold it this, the last week or so. Yeah. They just butchered it.
Well,
the only thing I can come think of it was Khashoggi. So.
No,
it was just really nobody want to touch it. So
you forgot the part about you forgot the part about the 2 week old airplane falling in the water. That's a problem.
Yes. Yeah.
What do you think happened there? Not that you know. I mean, not that you know more than. I mean,
we don't know, and you know, it's easy to speculate. I think what you really want is get. I think that I heard the ping last night about 100 feet below, over 72 feet of scattered parts. They had pings on the black boxes. They really need to get the black boxes. Prior to that, we can make all kinds of guesses. My dad was involved a lot with military accident reviews.
Well, the day before, allegedly,
not fighter jets, but on military airlift commands.
Allegedly, the day before,
as one of the people in that level, he had to sometimes actually go there.
Well, they had trouble.
They would get on the Falcon and be there instantly to see what's going on, and then the reports and all that. It's very very tough to say. Just from the wreckage, very difficult. The magic is the voice recorder and data recorder. Once you decipher those, I know on one of them he flew with it to U.S. for some lab here that would do it for them. They brought it from Iran, flew out here, and went through the recordings, sat there, and then flew back to file his report. These sort of things are complex situations. I don't know.
Well, very allegedly, the plane had...
It's easy to speculate. It's a very randomized to hit the target.
But the plane was screwed up the day before. They went to get it up to 5,000 feet, and it dropped 800 feet without warning, and they said there was something wrong with it.
But brand new aircraft, maybe a software issue. You know, you can't necessarily call it a maintenance issue if it's that new.
No.
But also... a lot of people overseas don't follow manufacturer directives. You know when something changes, like on the military stuff, was the big cargos were Lockheed Martin, now it's Lockheed Martin, out of Marietta, Georgia, that made a C-5A, made C-141s and C-130s. These are massive updates that you get constantly as they see an accident or they change something and so forth. And they also hold you down to certain maintenance requirements. Those come out. The overseas have a tendency of not taking them too seriously, at least in the civil aviation area.
Well, they
until they get their hands burnt.
Well, the thing had problems, and within 6 hours they had it back up with people on it. What can you fix on one of those things in 6 hours?
I don't know. If it's something simple, it could be depot level. These days, it's cheaper to unplug and replug. You put another one in. It's the same reason you go to Geek Squad. It's cheaper for them to give you to put a new SSD drive in than trying to fix what you have wrong. It's cheaper. The same thing happens on electronic side. If it was a mechanical item, I agree with you. It takes time. It takes time to put it together, fix it, and then test it. Did they actually do the short flight test, whatever, if it was mechanical, before they signed off on the airworthiness? I don't know. Again, overseas, keeping up with the maintenance requirements are very different than us here. The way the FAA has control here, and inspectors and so forth, you don't see it overseas. That's why I always prefer to fly U.S. flag carriers.
When the TWA was still around, I flew over for a wedding in Europe, of all things, We must. TWA. You know, they had the whole thing where they all leave from Kennedy at night. It was a classic hub and spoke type of thing. So we get in a 747. We wait in the line. We get to the front of the line. The guy pulls off. Something's wrong with our guidance system.
Okay. Yeah, simple problem. We got a 747. We have a guidance issue.
All right.
We have a president, but we've got an IQ issue.
Well, get a load of this. Get a load of this. The guy, he resets it, gets in line again. We wait another hour to get to the front of the line. He pulls out, actually 45 minutes. He pulls out, added things screwed up. We got to get a new one. So 20 minutes later, this guy shows up. He looked like the electrician with the belt with the 15 different screwdrivers in there with this box. All of a sudden, he's in the cockpit. It takes about 8 screws out, pulls the old one out, shoves the new one in, and the pilot goes, okay, we're good to go. We went, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I'm hoping this guy can find Britain without the box. I mean, I suppose the navigator could probably get us there without the damn thing, you would hope. But you never know. I don't know. Well, if you were
the hardware, the easiest way these days is just unplug and replace. On the software, you remote in.
All right, Friday,
what's wrong if you can? But
yes or no answer.
Software is much tougher to resolve.
You think we're going to retest? I sort of agree with you. We'll talk to you next week, buddy. We'll see if we did or we didn't, and we'll tweet something out about the webinar tonight. SP futures now up 10.25. They're up more. Dow futures up 110. We'll be right back with Sir David Adelman. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI ProDirect. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollie. This is Brett Weber on the board. S&P futures were leaking a little bit. Up only 850. Now we were down up 1350 when we came in, but still up. Dow up 99, NASDAQ futures up 17, so still positive. We've seen the days that were down heavy bounce back at the close. The days that were up heavy, we bounced the other way at the close. Last night we gave up 50% of the rally in the last 20 minutes, but it still was a solid rally. So if you look at the day's move, one with one number, you got a different view than if you were watching it all day, but still positive. Today over in Europe, we've got positive, but not as much as we were. DAX up 57.5%. FTSE up 0.91. Call that 91 cents. Call that flat. We're up earlier. CAC around down 57 cents. Call that flat. So, third quarter U.S. productivity rose 2.2%. So that just came out. It's right where the expectations were. So that's not a market mover. Nikkei down 232, 1%. Shanghai up 3. Call that flat. Hang Seng up 436, 1.75. We really got a lot of days, Manny, the last couple of months. For Nikkei and the Hang Seng have gone different directions. I'm not exactly sure where that is, but it has been happening. Oil down 33 cents, Brent down 51. The spread is down to $9.50 from like the 10.50. Natural gas, 3.30. Again, that's higher than I've seen. RBOB gas, 1.76. So RBOB's going down, natural gas going up. We have gold up 14.80 ounces. That's a big rally. 12.29. And silver up 19 cents. Copper only up a penny. Maybe we got for us traffic, weather, sports. Not much sports these days. That is a tough time of the year, isn't it, for sports?
It kind of is, especially when your basketball and hockey teams aren't particularly great. 35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Big story of the morning, of course, is that rollover crash down on 8094 eastbound just before Torrance Avenue on the Illinois side of the state line. It happened earlier this morning, a multi-vehicle crash involving a rollover and vehicle fire. One ejection, not good. It was blocking all lanes. Then an hour ago, it was blocking the three left lanes. Now it's just one left lane blocked, so they are making progress there. But avoid 8094 near Torrance if at all possible, because there's still congested traffic going through that area, and that investigation will take place throughout the morning commute. So
the body's probably still laying in the left lane.
Hopefully not.
Yeah.
Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford are looking okay. Traffic building heavily on the Stevenson and Eisenhower, but no accidents to report. Same could be said for the Edens and Kennedy. Suburban tollways are all quiet. Off the expressways, we have a crash in the Western Burbs North Avenue at West Avenue. And then out near Carroll Stream, County Farm Road at Schick Road, there's a crash. And then in the Northwestern Burbs, Old McHenry Road at Echo Lake Road, there's an accident as well. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, a cold, cloudy day today for the first day of November. Overcast skies, a high of 51, which is actually where we're at right now. So right now is our high for the day. We'll drop into the upper 40s later on, but no sign of sunshine at any point today. Lots of clouds and cool temperatures going up to 51, which is where we're at right now. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 78. Right now it's mostly clear and 55. In sports, Bulls lost a heartbreaker last night to the Nuggets, 108-107 in overtime. Suns were blown out at home by the Spurs, 120-90. In hockey, Blackhawks had an early lead, but fell late to Vancouver, 4-2. And as we touched on a bit earlier, Hall of Famer and Giants legend Willie McCovey passed away. He was 80.
Mr. Stretch. He was the best. I think he was, he and Willie Mays on the same team. Wow. And they had Orlando Cepeda, too. Talk about three thumpers.
Yeah. And then Juan Marichal.
Yeah.
On the mound. That was a pretty good team.
Got ya. It was, David, how are you?
I'm fine.
Hey, real quick before we dig into the stock market, Matty, what's the scoop on this guy from Maryland? He had a panel, and some guy dies in a hot summer practice, right?
Correct.
Isn't that the story?
Yep.
And he Then they put him on paid leave while they investigated it. They came back and said he was absolved of any wrongdoing, correct? So they reinstate him, and the next day he gets fired? Is that the timeline?
Yeah, he was suspended with pay for the first, you know, 8 games of the season, essentially, in all of training camp. So he wasn't involved with the team, and his assistants and his staff remained on board and are running the team right now. And then a board of regents voted to reinstate him, and then they got so much backlash from students and parents and alumni and all the way up to the governor of the state of Maryland, I guess, that they sort of reassessed their decision and decided to fire him the next day.
Well, what?
That's all I know. I haven't followed it too closely, but...
Well, what I guess
DJ Durkin, by the way, is the gentleman's name.
But what do they think he necessarily did wrong? I mean, he didn't intend to kill this guy. I mean, what was? I'm more pissed off about Kelly, the guy falling in the wind from the thing taking movies at a practice and not saying, "Hey, get that guy down here. It's too windy." I mean, I guess from indulge me for about a minute here, David. I played grammar school football. I didn't play high school. All we did was run. I was one of the fat kids, and I don't think I was 130 pounds. You know, I mean, I look at pictures of myself when I was supposed to be one of the fat guys, and I was 6'4", like 195. It was a whole different world. I mean, than there is now. I mean, my buddy Mark Duffy, when he played for Michigan, he said the only guy who was allowed to be 240 pounds on a team was Deardorff. He was such a huge man. Everybody else, and if your lineman couldn't run 100 yard sprints, you didn't want him on a football field. I mean, so but now you see people. I went to a Notre Dame game a few years ago. They played University of Washington. This is not racial or anything, but Washington had 2 guys on the sidelines, and I was with Audrey, and Audrey goes, "What are those 2 guys do? How did they pass the physical?" There's these 2 black guys, Maddie and David. They had to have been 375 pounds. They were massive guys, and the only thing they did is on the extra point, they would, or a field goal, they would jog out on the field. Before they made it to the hash mark, they had to stop and walk. And literally, I mean, it's funny, but it's no joke. If you ran behind them and stuck a match between their legs, you could have lit them. I mean, these guys were so friggin' big. I go, how do these guys, how could you possibly have a practice where it was 80 degrees and ask these guys to run some 40-yard wind sprints? They'd die. How do you even pass a physical like that? They were 100 pounds overweight. I mean, it looked like a pie-eating contest. How do you contrast that, where everybody has their own specific thing in football, to somebody dying on a hot day? And I'm not saying the guy who died was overweight or whatever, but stuff like that happens. I mean, do they think this guy did something specific where the guy was in trouble and he made him run after he knew he was? I mean, is it just something? Obviously, the people who investigated it are closer to it than the tweeters of the world. They must have said the guy didn't do anything wrong. And now how is it everybody else knows more?
That's a good question. I haven't followed it close enough to get into the details, so I have no idea.
You know what they, in Western movies, you know what they call the court of public opinion? It was a lynch mob. Am I right, David, or not?
I think you're right.
All right, David, what about this market? We seem to have made somewhat of a bottom. We'll come back some, although it's a little wobbly. We lost 60% of the rally in the last 20 minutes yesterday. Fari claims that we need to retest the lows before we can really say we're going back up. I don't know.
Why?
I don't, because that's what he said. I mean, that's what I'm asking.
I mean, you know, and the CNBC crowd, Grasso said, oh, we have to test the January, February lows. Why? Who said that?
I would agree with that.
And I'm not disagreeing with Fari. He may be right, or just from experience or observation or whatever. But the market does what it wants to do based on all the information that it has. There is no standard of procedure that bottoms are only made one way or the other way or this retracement or that. I find fault with, you know, and not Fari, but CNBC, you know, oh, well, 70% of the S&P, despite the 2 rallies, are in correction territory. What's correction? Oh, 10% off the highs. Who labeled that?
It's an arbitrary number.
We don't know.
Yeah, it's an arbitrary number.
And then bear market, 20%. Really? Who gave that the standard definition? Oh, we don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's who came up with this? You know, I wish, you know, I've even talked to you about it. You know, 30% is downside extension. Really? Who said that? 70% is upside extension.
Well, then
they come up with these arbitrary numbers, you know, and when I say they, the mass media, and that's what everyone's supposed to go on.
Well, I'm the kind of the theme of the show today, David, if there ever is a theme, because Lou asked me a question earlier. I've seen all the stuff. I don't know if I've seen the tariff stuff much. I don't know where we must have had some tariffs at some point, but I've seen revaluations before. I've seen political issues before. I guess I've seen trade war issues, but not that I can really remember. But I tell you what, I've never seen them all at the same time. This is, I'm very surprised. I think the bottom might be in for a little while, given the political stuff. I think it'll be a bathtub bottom, not a V bottom. But this is just one guy speculating.
Bottom.
Yeah, but this is, and I will specifically tell you that my opinion and whatever it costs for a payphone now, get your payphone. Don't try and spend my opinion. I think that given we've gone about as far as we need to go with the rates going from 2% to 3.25%. And if we stay here, we probably can hang here for a while. But there's been a serious tone change, I think. Don't look for Amazon to run back to, 2150 anytime soon. I mean, the valuation's just not there. So there's been some revaluation. There's some concern about interest going forward because look at the deficit we're in. There's some companies that are really doing well with this, with the, tariffs. I mean, look at those GM numbers yesterday, and $600 more per truck they're making in profit because they raised the prices through the roof last year. I mean, does that help the rest of the society? Probably no. I mean, there's a million things going on here, David, more so than I can think I can ever remember.
No question.
I wish I could figure them all out. And I'm very pissed off I wasn't on GM yesterday.
You know what? I agree with you, and I'm not either. But, you know, as the valuations went from PE of 7 to 6 to 5, you know, it's so cheap, and all it did was get cheaper to the point where the dividend yield exceeded the PE, which was a stone buy, and if you bought it, you lost money.
Right.
It really looked like instead of value, it looked like value trap. I didn't get caught long, but neither did I buy it.
Well, yeah, I've been long, I was saying to Maddie earlier, I've probably been long Ford more than GM, doing my earnings spreads and things like that. I've probably been long the stock 10, 15 times in the last 5 years. Now, maybe I made some money once on the upside. And all of a sudden, they're both. But General Motors is going to make more than Amazon this year, for God's sake.
And I don't own either one, full disclosure. But if you look at, you know, margins per car, GM went up 17% in the quarter, and Ford's went down 9%.
Well, I got to believe if the Silverado prices were up, so were the F-150s, because, I mean, that's as competitive as it gets.
And basically the mix, I mean, their Chinese sales of Cadillacs, holy cow.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know that's where they're making their money. Those and SUVs are where they're making all the money.
Well, I mean, I was saying yesterday that my pickup truck that I sold to Scott's Scummy, his son when he came back from Iraq, for a fair market price, I think I got $5,800 for it, or somewhere along those lines. 3-4 years ago, David, if I had the same truck today, I wouldn't sell it for less than $8,500.
Yeah.
I mean, a new Suburban, I mean, I think I looked $65,000 for a Suburban, for God's sake. You know,
and you know what? There's a little company, again, I don't own any, full disclosure, called Kemet, K-E-M-E-T. Do you know it?
No, what do they do?
They make electrical parts. Connectors and wiring and capacitors, and mostly capacitors, energy storage device, electrical storage device, all kinds of electrical components. The guy was on yesterday, and you know it's down, and because their exposure to automotive and blah blah blah, and they announced a good quarter, and then GM came out, and again I don't own the stock here or there. I followed it, never owned a share or shorted a share. But, you know, rocketed up 10, 15, 20% or whatever. They had the guy on. In an average Tesla, there are 26,000 Chemet parts.
Really?
I listened to that and I said, oh my God, I didn't know there were 26,000 parts, let alone Chemet electrical parts. So, I mean, when you look at a car like that and you say, geez, it's aluminum, it's this, it's that, so lightweight or whatever, geez, the markup has to be absolutely astronomical. How in the world until the latest quarter did Tesla only lose money? 26,000 parts from one company.
Well, I mean, even
if they were 1 inch long.
I used to notice, because my buddies at Pullman, I think a railroad car has something like 25, 30, 100,000 parts. I mean, if you look at each individual one, now you might have 100 of the same kind of screw.
Right. No, I get what you're saying.
But like an airline probably has a million.
At least.
Yeah, I mean, and so I got to believe a car if you take every little thing in there. I mean, I think Audrey's got one of the. She's got one of the Cadillac SUV that every real estate person, every female real estate person
Escalade.
Drives. No, the smaller one.
XT5.
Yeah, something like that. And I mean, her cousin said there's like 25 individual little computers on a damn thing.
Oh yeah, it's. I saw one the other day, and you could change your screen, not just settings, but actually the visuals. You know, if you wanted odometer, if you didn't, if you wanted gas, if you didn't, if you wanted the temperature,
yeah.
The engine, the oil, like six different ways, just that one panel.
Well, I'm kind of in the market. Probably in the next 6 months to a year, I'm going to pick up a pick me up. You know, just in case. Just to have one in reserve. I'm gonna get one before 2005. It's gonna have roll up windows, and it's gonna have none of the computer. Well, the computer drives the thing, but none of that other stuff. And that's it, David. I want none of that crap.
No 8-track radio.
No, God, no.
If there's tape.
If there's a CD player in there, I'll roll with that.
By the way, you can follow us on Twitter at Stocks the Letter N Jocks. PGA Saluki tweets us. He says, what say David about this observation from the legendary Ralph Acampora?
I don't know.
He says, the damage that has been done technically to the stock market is much, much worse than people are talking about. I was waiting for a correction, but this is something different. What does David feel about that?
I like Ralph Acampora. He is legendary, got a good reputation. He is not one of these people who goes on, you know, standards of, you know, 20% for bear market and that kind of thing. And when you look at, you know, 200-day averages, 50-day averages, 200-week averages in certain cases, yeah, it's they violated huge support and huge, you know, technical indicators and whatever. That said, you know, you took the market to a very, very extended period to where, you know, if nothing else, this bounce seems legitimate as well. So we'll see. If the market backs and fills and then takes out some resistance, maybe it has in fact bottomed. If instead it insists on railing off the bottom with no correction, tests some overhead resistance and then fails, then, you know, it could be a deeper downspout than what one would think. In general, I probably lean, and I'm not necessarily bearish, at least for the short term, but I lean 70-80% in agreement with him.
David, what, as we, again, the theme of the show today has been, all this stuff is kind of impacting at once. What do you make of, I think by the end of the day or the end of the week, the market is, for lack of a better term, it is where, how stupid is this? It is where it is. I mean, it gets to the spot, but I'm very concerned, and we've been talking about it. I talk more about it with Kenny Polcari on Tuesday than you, because we're talking usually more about levels and stuff with you. But the fabric of the market, to me, looks really lousy. I mean, when you have a day like yesterday where you can't, if you're in the way to the upside, I mean, your ass is getting beat big time. Okay, and all of a sudden last night, 25 minutes to 3, we came to the downside. We gave up the S&P futures, or S&P, SPY was up 520, and 20 minutes later, it's up 230.
I mean, but remember, I agree with you, and that is a sign. The market does the most work upside and downside in the last hour, and that's been very prevalent. Do you remember what, quote-unquote, let's just pretend for a minute that this is the bottom. What did the market do Monday?
It did the big turnaround.
Yeah, it was down 460 ended up down 240.
Right, wrong,
rarely 220 points in the last 45 minutes.
No, what I'm saying is, and I agree, it's been both ways. My point is, David, with all the 90 bazillion exchanges and stuff, there isn't a standing order anywhere. Once it turns, we're talking about 200-300 point moves in 10 minutes. All of a sudden, there's no buyers. Oh no, now there's no seller. There isn't a standing order anywhere. I mean, if you have a trade in there, you better have your order in to sell or to buy to cover yourself. And I don't know if you actually. Thank God we've got, well, all my people are. You know, we've got puts or something, so on everything, to where the point where, you know, we're actually scalping the hedge, which is not where you're supposed to be, but it works, it spends. I don't think I've ever seen, we could be up 800 points and 2 minutes later it's 400 points. There's not even a piece of news. It's just all of a sudden there's a seller someplace. There isn't a standing order. There's nobody there. And all of a sudden we move and then all of a sudden we turn to go the other way and there's nobody there. I find it very disheartening, Dave, because one of these days we're not going to turn one way or the other. We're going to just kind of keep going, and I don't know where we're going to find a bid down there or a seller.
No, I agree. And, I mean, really, though, to an extent, I'm not saying every day, every week, or even every month. It's certainly been more prevalent when the VIX is, you know, 20 to 30 than when the VIX was 8.5 to 12. You
right.
know, you get that volatility, you get empty air pockets, both upside and downside, where there's nothing there. And the algorithms and the dark holes, you know, take over based on momentum, and they just keep going. But in fact, we saw the first sign of this in the flash crash, May of 2010. That's a long time ago. I mean, that's, you know, more than 8 years ago, 8.5 years ago. So once the algos and the dark holes or dark, you know, stuff takes over, and if there's air pockets and nothing there, they just push it. And then the rebounds from there. If you remember May of 2010, we broke 1,000 points, and, oh, everybody made money on the downside, and it was just all selling short without even having to borrow stock. It was just all punishing the ETFs, you know, that were there at that time. What few people remember at all was off the 1,000-point break, we recovered 620 minutes.
Well, if this comes to a lousy end one day, do you think the SEC is ever going to stand up and say it's our fault we let this happen?
I don't know the answer to that.
I think
I
you
mean,
do.
I
think the answer is
so.
No.
I mean, when I see it, and you'll have a good trade on. You'll have a put as a hedge or whatever that may turn into a trade, you know, when they give you that much in a minute. So now, you know, the Dow brand, you know, I diamond puts, I had some.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, you make 50 cents on a $4, you know, put, you know, in a few minutes you say, thank you, I haven't seen that for a while, I'll take that. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's $2.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you say, Jesus.
Well, Monday night, I don't know if you were watching the spiders on the close, SPYs. I said, you know what? I should buy some of these. These puts were like 10-13. I said, I should just buy some of these. There's no way you're going to do a spread because you're not going to get the spread off, right?
Right.
So I should just buy these things. And I don't, of course, because, you know, I don't really do that much short-term trading for my guys. So I don't buy any. And all of a sudden, 20 cents, 25, 30, a buck, buck and a half, two. They get to 3:50. This is This is 10 minutes to three, and I go, you know, we're going to bounce back here like we do every night on the close. If I had them, I'd sell them here and I'd buy the 63 calls.
Right.
And we're down to like we're trading below 260, and then I say to myself, self, you idiot, well, you're talking about a percent and a half move in 10 minutes. We went a whole year without a 1.5% move. You know, so why would I even consider buying those calls? Guess what? The puts went off worthless, and the calls were on 90 cents. So if I'd have puked the puts out at 350, bought twice as many as the calls, and sold them at 90 cents, that would have been about the most profitable half hour, like, for God's sake. I mean, I just...
Do you remember in 2015, from mid-January to mid-July, the market was 2.5% up to 2.5% down.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
5 months.
5 months.
And in 2 weeks, it went 15% down.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that there isn't a standing order anywhere, that there's nothing but a black hole, no customer ever trades with another customer, I think that entire, people have heard me say this, this entire system is flawed, David.
I agree.
And the thing that we do most for our clients is we know it's flawed and deal with it effectively, I think, or as effectively as you can. I don't think these other places, you think you're putting these orders in electronically that somehow or another this is going to be good for you? I think you need somebody like us that'll say, look, I can't get out of that one, or this one's illiquid, don't be in there. You need somebody to help you. S&P futures up 5.25, Dow futures up 76, NASDAQ futures up 5, we've come back quite a bit. We'll be right back tomorrow morning, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.